Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back to our second episode of Me, Myself, and I. I'm Jen, and this is Bill.
Hello.
So let's get to it.
I think this week we said we were going to talk about accountability and reward. And what I was thinking is we could just split that in two parts. We talk about, look at how we hold ourselves accountable. Talk about the kind of the tricks, the methods we use, what works, what doesn't. And then move on to kind of talking about how we look at reward and or punishment, if that's your thing, for what happens when you hold yourself accountable and you achieve or don't achieve what you set out to do. So, Jen, how do you hold yourself accountable?
Well, obviously, like, pair programming is a really good way. So far, it has worked wonders for myself. Also, I think, you know, like, at the end of each session, you know, based on what we've been doing so far, like, you know, kind of have like a kind of like a take home assignment, like a work homework where I, you know, go and do whatever it is I need to do. And so that I have something to like present for the next session. So that holds me accountable because I know like I need to get this code work. Well, not working, but like write something so that, you know, there's content for the next session. But whereas if I don't do that, then it'll be like a session wasted for me. Right. Because I don't know, because like I guess that's just like the student teacher in me, I guess. So like I having homework, quote unquote homework, not necessarily homework, practice sheet, whatever you call it.
So it feels like there's two things in there. There's the accountability partner or the pair in something like pair programming, where you've got somebody that's working with you on doing something. And there's something in there, there's a dynamic that says, because you're doing it with somebody else, you're able to hold yourself accountable, right? It's, you don't want to let somebody down. You want to be there. You want to show up. You want to participate. But then there's the second part, which is kind of like the, you call it homework or the take home. That one's more interesting because it's like, who's setting that? Is it somebody else's holding you accountable by setting that challenge, or are you setting yourself the challenge? That one's an interesting one.
I think it's a bit of both, because like you suggest something and then, you know, I contemplate if it's suitable for my level, and then yes, then yeah, I'll have a go at it. If not, then we'll think of something that's more suited for my ability. And or like sometimes I'll, you know, have suggestion. Oh, okay, well, maybe I can do this. And then it's kind of a ping pong back and forth, bouncing off ideas, I think.
I think that the idea of that accountability partner, it's something I've only come across in the world of kind of learning tech, right? And it's heavily dominated by self-learners, people learning online using all the incredible resources we have access to. Have you come across the idea of kind of accountability partners elsewhere? Because I think you talked about learning a ton of other things like watercolor, etc., piano when you were younger. Have you seen accountability partners or kind of that idea of pairing crop up anywhere else?
No, I mean, like learning piano when I was little, my parents, Asian parents, they like, it's like I have no choice. Like they, like, you know, like they'll show like, as in like this, okay, well, it's time for us, you know, to practice piano. And then my dad will actually like set the timer and everything. Right. So it's not like I could weasel my way out.
But something more recent, like watercolor, which you chose to do yourself, you chose to take that on during lockdown. I don't remember you talking about pairing or working with somebody when you were doing it. It was a kind of self-initiated thing. How are you holding yourself accountable for that?
I think because it's more of a hobby, so maybe I wouldn't really use the word holding myself accountable. Because, you know, like accountability, I think that's something a bit more serious, like a bit more job related or like performance based. Because I mean, for that watercolor, it was just a way for me to like entertain myself, for me to relax. And then it's more like a conversation opener. You know, it's like showing my friends, hey, this is something cool I've done, you know. It's not like, you know, I make myself watercolor for half an hour every single day. The last time I watercolored was like in September. So it's like over a month and it's still here. Like I haven't made any progress on it. Maybe the next time it rains. Yeah, so like you see this gap of consistency. It's not, you know, I'm not saying that every day I have to do a little bit, right? It's just like, oh, when I feel like it, when the weather is crap outside, when, you know, then yeah. But I guess another this kind of leads into, because it's like something you could also do with like a group of friends, so like paint night. So, you know, like, I, you know, like I've actually talked about this with my other expat friends, you know, like winter's coming, like when it's too cold to go outside, or like when it's raining, like just have your friends over and then you could do your own paint night where you sip on wine and paint and have like a charcuterie board. So it's also like something you could do with like a group of people. So, but then again, I wouldn't hold that as accountability. That's more like socializing.
I think there's a bit of both in there, but the emphasis is clearly socializing. If you were to step back and go, what are you interested in improving your ability to paint or to watercolor? And if the answer is yes, you could look at that as what you're doing is you're setting yourself up with an environment where you are able to practice and improve. You're doing so in a way that's socially positive and fun, and it's kind of removing the chore aspect of learning. And I think the use of context or situation to provide yourself with the ability to learn is quite powerful. If you view why I think there's a bit of both in there, and why I think it's important is if you take all the things that you want to learn or improve at and you just stack them in series throughout the day, you would very quickly find that your weeks, you ran out of time, right? There's so much you want to spend on, maybe in your case, coding, watercolor, cooking, socializing, all these things that you want to do. And where I think you start to get some real benefits is where you can look for context to learn or improve the way you're doing something, but in a context that's going to arise anyway. So it's no longer a chore that sits outside of daily life. It sits as part of daily life. And I'm reminded of we were talking about something very deeply techie of like JSON object structures, right? How do you represent things as JSON objects? And two ways we could have looked at that. You could sit down in front of a code editor and you could start typing JSON. You go, right, car has four wheels. Like, what color is it? It's got a color property. Or we could do the, hey, next time you're going around the mall, just talk to me about how you would describe the object on the second shelf from the bottom using JSON. And so now you've got an opportunity to, I'm not sure this is a good thing or not, but an opportunity to think about structuring or representing real world objects as part of doing something that you were going to do anyway. So you've set yourself up with the context or the scenario in which you can learn something without having to sort of call it learning. And I think it's the same with the watercolor, but just a lot less technical and a lot more social is, hey, if I bring all my friends round, and in my case, I could do it. We talked about Chinese, right? So if I bring all the friends round and say, we're going to have hot pot, that's me giving myself, hey, it's a meal, it's fun, it's social, we'll get some beer, we'll have some fun, we'll have a laugh, and let's be honest, we'll probably speak English for most of it. But it's also me setting myself up with an opportunity to practice Chinese with friends who are native speakers, right? So I think there are ways where you can, as part of holding yourself accountable for improving a skill that you would like to develop, using context or situation is a trick that you can do to kind of keep yourself making progress without it feeling like it's a chore. So I think there is a relationship there.
Because, yeah, this brings me back to, like, when I was first starting to learn Jason, where I was like, what the heck is Jason? Like, it's, you know, like, the squiggly bracket and then, you know, and then, like, so because I remember, like, we were trying to, like, identify, like, objects in the household, right? And then, like, you would, you know, give me, like, all, you know, let's say a fridge, right? Like, the length is, you know, it's got length, it's got width, color, the model, the contents, right? And then based on that, then, like, oh, well, this could be a fridge, right? So, like, that was quite fun because it's, again, I think it's, like, this relatability of real life-ness to it. Like, it's, you know, it's more tangible. Like, it's, like, has real life, like, it's a lot more interactive. Like, it's just real life, right? So, like, because it's real life, so I suppose, like, it doesn't feel quite as chorey.
Mm.
Versus just, like, okay, let's, like, you know, deconstruct what goes in a JSON object, which is still needed, right, in order to, like, understand what encompasses JSON. Like, you need to understand, like, there's, like, squiggly brackets, square brackets, and then where does the colon go, and then at the end of each there's, like, a comma, right? But I think, like, practicing writing the syntax of it and understanding, you know, it's like an array of, you know, JSON objects got an array, and then, like, within the array there's an array of objects for, you know, for the qualities of a fridge, right? But then it's like a fridge, it's like, well, it's something like you encounter every single day, so it's easy to practice with. It's like, you know, very hands-on, and then you can turn that into a game. So, like, if I give you, like, you know, the characteristics, then you have to guess what the object is.
Turning into a game, there's another trick for accountability. I like this one because it's one that comes up a lot with my son. He's 4. He likes maths. He likes numbers. Obsessed with numbers. And you could sit down with numbers and you could say, add this to this, or add that to that, or take this from this, or divide this by that. And unusually, maybe, he likes to do that. But there are better ways to kind of make this more fun and more engaging. And he's recently found, I don't know if you know the game Snakes and Ladders, it might be called something different, board of squares. Some squares have a ladder that go from one going up, and yeah, some have a snake that goes down. Right. So he rolled the dice. And typically what we would do, even as adults, you find yourself counting the squares, right? So I get a 6, I go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and I move my little counter or token along, right? So what we've started to do is we roll the dice, we cover the board, we say, you're on square this, where do you end up? And so as part of figuring out where you're going to go, he's now trying to add the numbers in his head. So he might be counting, he might be adding, he might be doing tricks. And they've got kind of a little bit of, I don't want to use the word gamification, but you're turning a learning activity or a kind of routine practice that could otherwise be seen as a chore into a game. And that makes it fun. And now the whole family's involved and can try and do the maths in different languages. And you can find lots of different ways to bring these things in. But once it becomes fun, it becomes less of a chore. So I like the game aspect of it as well.
Well, because I think at the end of the day, it's like human nature to want to have fun, because when you're having fun, then time goes by so much quicker, and then you're not, you know, oh my gosh, when is this going to end? Counting down the seconds, right? Like, you're like immersed in it, like, and also through, like, well, it's like in education, it's like learning via games, right? Like, it you just absorb everything a lot quicker and more deeply as well, because it's fun, right? So, like, it...
I think this is my experience of the kind of the pairing aspect of things as well, is when it becomes a conversation, when you're enjoying it, you're talking about things, you can lose track of time very, very quickly. You can just get sucked in and you can keep going and going and going. And then something jolts you out of it and you're going, wow, how long have I been doing that? Why am I so exhausted? Did I miss lunch again? Did I miss dinner?
Oh, I never forget about food.
Oh, no. So accountability and kind of pairing works for you in the coding sense. Would you now that you've kind of done a fair bit of it, would you take pairing or accountability partner as a trick into learning other things? Would you use it in other contexts? Or is it just kind of reserved for the domain of code and tech?
I think for sports especially, because I can't think of a... Well, maybe winter sport, because that's more like individual, like skiing, skating. But then I think with learning, it's always more fun when you involve other people that are also keen on the same thing. Because I've also, for safety reasons, right? Because I remember when I was skiing in Canada, like, you never go skiing. I mean, pros do, but, like, I never did. Like, none of my friends did, right? Like, so I think learning sports would be, like, you know, like, obviously, like, you have to learn how to, like, do the S-curves. Like, you have to learn how to, like, lean on the edges, and you have to learn to stop. But I don't know, it's kind of like when you go as a group and then going down, like, certainly, you know, like, let's say, like, a black run, right? Then, like, you know, obviously, you know, friends who are more advanced, they'll go down to the bottom of the slope quicker, but then, you know, they'll wait for you, you know, because I fall, you know, kind of. So
really interesting you bring up sports, because that's the one area where I would have gone the opposite way.
Really? I mean, footy, like football, right? Like,
there are team sports that are going to be really hard to do without somebody else. But if I take one that can be quite individual, of running, just the idea of, okay, set yourself a distance goal, right? So by the end of this year, I would like to run half marathon, marathon, whatever. And at the start of the year, you go, how am I going to get there? And there is a lot of advice that says, go find someone to run with. Go find a running club. And they're everywhere, right? Every city has tons of running clubs. You can find them all over the place. And so faced with that choice, run with people or run by yourself, I have found it far more, I don't want to use the word productive, but far easier to keep a momentum and a pace and improve when running by myself than I have in a group. Now, with code, with language, with other things, I would have gone completely the opposite way, right? Having somebody to pair with would be awesome. Right? If I take photography, I quite like photography. It goes in phases, but if there was somebody else around me that was really interested in photography, of course you'd go. You'd meet up. You'd go and do things together. Photo walks are a thing, right? They're a thing for a reason. Yes, you each have your own camera, but you're doing something together. You're talking, you're comparing notes, you're having fun. It's social. But for some reason, running has gone the other way for me, and I am far more able to keep myself on a schedule, keep working towards a goal when I'm doing it myself. Which is odd, because one of the tricks that I often see used when people ask about how you hold yourself accountable when you're learning something yourself or you're working towards a goal is the kind of idea of public statements of intent. So just to kind of build on the running one, if I start of the year, right, I'm going to use New Year's resolutions because they're not too far off, but I go public and I get social media out, I tell all my friends, by the end of this year, I am going to run a half marathon or run a marathon. Some people find that, and it's often recommended as a way to hold yourself accountable, right? Mm. I've put it in the public, therefore I'm going to work towards it. Again, I found that doesn't work for me. The whole idea of putting it out in public comes with this idea of failure, of not meeting it, and that just doesn't work. I feel like it's not a motivator. If I take the same statement, by the end of this year, I will do, and just don't talk about it, don't tell anybody, but set myself the goal, I find it quite much easier to kind of work towards it when there isn't that fear of not meeting somebody else's expectation hanging over you. So again, like, the maybe it's a just a running thing, but the idea of public commitment has never worked for me. I am most definitely a lists/streaks person. So in the I'll give three examples, right, is when I wanted to learn to write Go as code, something as kind of sort of trendy as like 100 days of code, all right, write code for 100 days straight, and each day commit something to GitHub. It doesn't matter what it is, it just needs to be meaningful code that you have written. That is something that I can just kind of, that works for me. I can easily go through 100 days of find things to write code about, commit them, gradually improve, take notes. That's fine. This idea of repetitive work towards progress. I did it with photography of one of these one photo a day for a year challenges in the early days of Instagram, when I still had an account, was just take a photo every day for a year. And if I've still got that collection of 365 photos, because it's an incredible collection of variety. There are days when it was like you're stuck in a hotel room because you've been in an office all day, and what do you take pictures of? And you start to be creative. You start to think differently. You start to bounce light through glasses that are left in the mini bar type thing in order to get creative photos to take. And this idea of that streak of I cannot miss a day in 365 days, I find weirdly motivational. I have the same with language. Learn five Chinese characters a day is something I could easily get behind. So streaks, the idea of missing a streak is really quite, I don't know. I find it's not motivational, but it's just, it breaks that big goal and accountability for the big goal into much smaller goals. In 24 hours, if I can't do a little bit of this, then I'm not making the right decisions, right? You can carve out 5 minutes to write some code, no problem at all. So streaks works for me.
I suppose like that also, like that's trial and error, right? Like that takes, like you have to know what works for yourself. And then that usually takes in the form of trial and error. Like, how do I know if like streaks is going to like work for me, right? Like just try it out, like maybe for a week. Okay, well, how do I feel by the end of it? Like, have I made any progress? Yes and no. And then you can sort of like cross it. Okay, this doesn't work for me. And then try one that works. Streaks, I don't know. Like for me, like that's yes and no. I think it depends on what. I don't think I could. I mean, I can like read something about code, you know, whether that's like a video or, you know, like a blog post or something. But like, because I feel like for me, like, to type on actual line of code, like I need it in like an assignment format, not assignment form, but yeah, like it needs to be like clearly outlined for me. So like, but maybe that's just because like I'm still a very much beginner, so like I need a lot more structure. I can't just like pull things off the top of my head. It's like, okay, well then I can, you know, write a line of code about, I don't know, like, see, like, I'm even, like, lacking ideas of what I can write code about. I need someone to tell me or give me an idea.
That's not you. That's not a beginner thing. I do have some cautions about the kind of streaks mentality, but I have very clear memories of the 100 days of code thing happened to coincide with the year my son was born. So you can imagine how do you go through a period like this when you're supposed to be like, you're kind of going through writing code. And I can't just tell me to write code about something now. I'm like, exactly like you. I'm looking around the room going, what do I write? What, I haven't got a problem to solve. What do I write? There were times when I took my laptop, sat in a coffee shop, stared out the window, raining outside. And it was like, right, well, let's come up with some ideas. Well, let's think of some things. And I went to GitHub and I created issue after issue after issue of just small little things that I could write code for. So sometimes it was something as simple as pick two names out of a hat for some competition that we're going to be running. Of course, there's a tool that does that, but I'm going to write my own. It's an excuse. And just gradually build up these little issues. And spend the time making, while you're in this creative way of thinking, spend the time making sure they are small enough that if you only get 20 minutes when a child is sleeping, you could sit down, open an issue and go, this is small enough, there's enough here, I understand what this is, I don't have to be creative, I can just write the code. So separating the creativity from the doing, or the thinking about what to do from the actual task of doing it, was something that really, really worked for me. The same with Chinese characters, right? If I have to sit down and what character will I learn next today, I'll spend ages thinking about what to learn as opposed to just having my list of five for today ready, available when I have the time to do them. But there is a caution with the streaks mentality is you can get stuck in a rut, right? Where you, why am I doing this every day? I'm doing this because I don't want to lose that little tick in the box or the little circle against it that says I've done it today. I think there's an element of self-discipline needed that says, is this beneficial? Is this moving me forwards? And if it's not, you have to be bold enough to say, I'm doing this because I'm motivated by not breaking the streak, but at this point in time, it makes sense to stop. And that could be quite painful, right? I take photos once a day for 365 days, and I think I actually have a 366th photo where on the I thought, ooh, I've done this far, why don't I carry on? And then just went, no. This has become a repetitive thing. It's time to stop and think about photography in a different way. So I think there is a discipline that needs to come with it. I'm not coding every day now. would I do it again? Yeah, of course I would. But when it makes sense to do so. So I would come with a word of caution about anyone thinking about using streaks. And you're absolutely spot on. Figure out, try, trial and error, what works for you.
But I think I also really like how you separated like the quote-unquote creative side of like, okay, so what am I going to learn versus like the so like researching, you know, like what content am I going to learn versus like actually learning the content. So that's like breaking down like an abstract topic into like achievable parts. I think it's like SMART goal, it's like what achievable, attainable, something, I forgot what the acronyms stand for, but like I remember reading somewhere like same thing.
Specific, measurable.
Yeah, there we go. Like the same thing with like teaching, right? Like your goals, like are they SMART goals, right? Like are they attainable? Like is it measurable? La da da da. So I think like breaking down something as abstract as self-learning into like doable chunks, I think that in itself is quite motivating because like it's just all of us like once you break and then again I think that's like problem solving, right? Like how do you tackle something that's so abstract into like achievable chunks? So that in itself it's a reward. It's like, oh okay, this is like all of a sudden, okay, so these are the 10 steps I need to do in order to achieve that. Okay, well then each day like I can cross off one off the list, right?
And I was torn between streaks and lists because I'm also a list person, right? I have a list of things I need to do today. And most mornings, not every morning, I'll sit down, and I'll go, here's the things left over. Do I still want to do them? And I'll work out what my list is and I'll just go through and tick them off. Which is, it's almost that this checklist is, it's kind of similar. It's got similarities with streaks. But for me, this is where it starts dovetailing into reward, is the satisfaction that comes with ticking off those items on that list is a form of reward. And so I think we could probably move in and start talking about how we reward ourselves or where we draw reward from when we're walking through things. And I think working through things. And I think lists for me is definitely one, right? If I finish a day and I've done everything on the to-do list, or I have sensibly moved it to another day when it is more appropriate to do it, and the list is empty, I feel happy. I feel like I've done something. I don't know what I've done necessarily, but it feels that sense of achievement is there. It helps. And I have to ask myself why it helps, because who cares whether you've got ticks next to items? It's just a simple visualization of progress or visualization of kind of accomplishment. And I think that helps, because when we learn things, I think we touched on this last time, the timescales can be quite long. Right, so if I'm learning characters and I tick off 5, but today I only tick off 4, it's like, well, should I beat myself up over it? No, I hit 4 out of 5, that's not too bad. But it doesn't really help. But if I add up those 4 out of 5s every day, and some days it's 5, some days it's 3, and you look back over a year, and yes, I have done this, you can draw the graph that says, what characters did I learn over the days? And you go, wow, have I really passed 1,000 characters?
That's impressive.
That feels like progress.
You like, that's 1/10 of, I think there's like 10,000 Chinese characters, but we only really use 5,000.
I've deliberately left off talking about recall accuracy, right, which could reduce that number quite significantly. But in terms of thinking about progress and actually feeling like you've earned something, you've earned the right to feel rewarded, that's quite powerful. To take lots of little things and to be able to draw them up and visualize them as something that adds up to a bigger picture. So visualization of progress is why I think lists really work for me. So I guess, how do you reward yourself, or where do you draw your reward from as you're learning?
Not so much from lists, because I only make lists when I go grocery shopping, or like when I'm moving, like have I packed everything, you know, when I'm traveling, like make sure, you know. But I think like sharing it with friends, friends, close friends, not like every single acquaintance, and then friends who actually, you know, feel proud for you and, you know, support you. And I think, you know, when I share, you know, like, oh, I've started a podcast with my friends, like, oh my gosh, like they're actually excited to listen to them and then give me feedback. So I feel that's really rewarding, like, you know, like having these encouragements, that for me works quite well. And also, like, you know, like they find that, you know, they found it so far, you know, beneficial to them as well, right? So like that's also a reward, like knowing that, you know, like it's a relatable topic, like, you know, it provides some sort of reassurance, or just however they use it, like, as in, like, it is useful / beneficial to people in some way. So like that in itself is also a reward for me, but I think mostly friends, because they're like, oh, you know, congrats, like, you know, you're doing this, that's so great. Like,
I really like hearing how different like two people can be and where they draw their reward, because I am usually terrible about sharing achievement, both in a work context and also in a personal context. It's one thing that I definitely tried to improve on, is like take a thing that you've done and tell people about it, but I find it quite difficult. So the 1,000 characters thing, for example, I found it easier to celebrate and talk about and share the excitement when my son had reached 100 characters of going through an app that says he's hit 100 characters. We made a cake, we wrote his name in Chinese, and put 100 characters, and we celebrated, right? I just wanted to make a cake. But those excuses for celebrating I find much easier with others. I quite like being able to, in a work context, say that somebody has achieved something, done something amazing, been really helpful. I quite like that kind of positivity and energy that comes from it. But I really struggle, and it's not I struggle to call it out and say when I've achieved something, I just struggle to notice it. Kind of, I don't feel like I just did my job. I don't feel like I've achieved anything. And so when I kind of went through that 1,000 character barrier, it was like, ooh, little smile to myself. Cool. I took a screenshot of the graph. It's like filed away, and it was like, cool, there, done. Carry on. Didn't think I would go and shout about it. I do occasionally celebrate rewards like that by sharing in almost an anonymous context. So I could take a language learning forum or a language exchange forum, and I could say, hey, look, I've just passed this milestone, knowing full well that on the balance of probabilities, nobody I know is going to ever see that, right? It's almost like a public but mini private celebration or kind of bragging of an achievement. So I'm almost the opposite. And it's like, I very rarely do. I say, hey, look, I've achieved a thing. Because that draws attention to me for a little bit and I just feel uncomfortable. So I really enjoy how totally different our approach to celebration is, as our approach to reward. When I published my first ever app in the App Store and it was downloaded by somebody.
Ooh, what was the app about?
Long story, but the app is no longer there. Oh. Something about a breach of rules and copyright and everything else. And I said, I just don't have the energy to try and address this. So remove the app. It was a streaks checker.
Mm.
So a mini little Pomodoro timer, 25 minutes. Did you do work for 25 minutes or did you get distracted? And there are tons of them in the App Store. I didn't build it to be an app. I built it to learn how to build an app, right? And I thought, I'll just publish it. When there was one download on it, I was like, I need to celebrate, right? Mm. Mini milestone.
That's a huge milestone. Like,
not so much that I'd released a successful app, but it was just the fact I'd been through the process, start to finish, build an app, publish it, and have it on somebody else's phone. So I went out and had breakfast by myself in a little coffee shop around the corner from home and was like, hey, I deserve nice breakfast, quiet time, no laptop, no nothing, mini celebration. No public shouting about it until now. But it, for me, that's my reward. It's like a mini break, a mini sort of chill out. Last thing in the world I thought about was saying, hey, I'm going to go tell friends and family I've done a thing. And yeah, it's really weird how different we can be with reward.
I wonder if this has to do like a bit of like gender, because like females tend to like share a lot more just in general with like friends, right? Because we're just more verbal, like we let each other know what's going on in our lives. It's just a female trait versus like males typically, unless it's like, oh, like I got a big promotion, I got a new job, like something that's quite a milestone, like it, but as in like it's like everyone can say that as a milestone, like there's no dispute over that, if that makes sense. And then, you know, it's like, oh, like I got a promotion, I'm not like a senior engineer or like, you know, a team lead at company XYZ, right? You know, or, you know, I got a bonus, you know, 10,000 pounds, you know, versus like these sort of like little, like everyday achievements, like, oh, like, you know, like after this, I'm going to go text my friends and tell them like, hey, like our second episode is now available. Like we've just finished recording it. When it's done, you know, being edited, I'll send it to you. They're like, yeah, great. Like send it over and then I'll have a listen. So it's kind of like, I suppose like finding little things to celebrate about in life. Maybe that's more of like a female thing. It's just.
So when you said gender, I almost stopped listening and went straight to what I was going to reply, which was that my life is not devoid of encounters with men who like to brag about achievements that may be almost insignificant, right? But you can still find a man that's going to brag about it and talk about it in a way it's the biggest thing in the world. But actually listening to you describe the difference there, there is a subtle difference between big public bragging at one end of a spectrum. Then there's my scenario of just quietly go sit in a coffee shop and have a nice breakfast because you've achieved something. And then there's maybe this isn't a spectrum, but they're just different ways of approaching it. The thing what you were describing is a little bit more, it is social, right? You're sharing it with a group. You're sharing the achievement, but not in a public bragging fashion. You're sharing it with a close-knit set of people who are going to actually, I think you described as be proud for your achievement, right?
Yeah.
So I think there is a difference. I don't know where gender fits on that, whether gender's a cause, whether it's a stereotype, I'm not sure. I'm sure others have done a far more research and have sort of numbers and studies to back it up. But just from experience, there are yeah, bragging and shouting about achievements is something that I think occurs with men quite often.
True. I think especially like work related, you know, like, oh, like, you know, I, you know, this app, you know, like I built this API, you know, that was all me, like this 10,000 lines of code. This was my contribution, right? Like slap my name all over it. Me. And then, you know, like tell it to everyone. But so there's like, yeah, like what you said, like very public, like everyone needs to know about, like, ooh, look at me. Whereas like versus like sharing, but like in a more intimate setting. And I think that for me is like my reward, like knowing that people that I care about and people who cares about me, like they take joy in sharing what I've, not necessarily an achievement, but just, I don't know, it's like recording a podcast in the stream. But I suppose it is, because it's, you know, it's like a fun project, right? So it's just like you've done something creative, like you're you know, it's making it, is it making an impact? I'm hoping it is, but it's just making it.
I think we started to move towards the idea of self-promotion, which is probably something that we could pick up in a kind of a separate episode, because self-promotion is a huge topic. I really struggle with it. Some people find it easy. So we could pick that up. There is one other aspect of reward that really stands out in my more recent career that it's worth probably mentioning, and it's money. Money as a reward for achievement is something that I found it's quite a difficult sort of relationship or association that I perhaps hadn't appreciated until fairly recently. There's a certain aspect of money that it's like, once you are no longer worrying about money, right? If you are in a privileged, fortunate position to not be worrying about money day to day, then there's the obvious question of, does money act as a motivator? Like to behave differently, to do different things, to achieve better, to win. There's a lot of studies out there that look at this. I've never actually, until fairly recently, never actually thought about it as a topic. And you take a job where performance-related pay is a key component, right? Any form of organization that's got sales anywhere near it is going to have sales targets and motivation and bonuses for hitting the targets and compensation. I remember being absolutely shocked at how differently people behave when you move the financial incentives around. As an individual, I've always been more naturally inclined to go, I'll do a good job, or what I think is a good job, and hopefully be rewarded from it. Now, it might be quite naive. But what I found was really surprising was when you say to somebody, hey, you get paid double if you go over here and three times if you go over there, you can very, very quickly change behavior to get everyone going over towards where it says three times. And I didn't think this was the case. I thought people would be a bit more, okay, I've reached a threshold. It's no longer the biggest motivator thing to me. But actually, what surprised me is money is a hugely powerful motivator. And I can't say I like it, because for me, if you take those two scenarios, double if you go to the right and three times if you go to the left, if you add some other qualifiers to it, right? Double if you go to the right, but it's massively interesting and it's going to deliver value to a lot of people. Three times if you go to the left, but it's really mind-numbingly dull. I find myself now having a bit more of a dilemma, right? Of course you want more money. More money enables things, but that's interesting. And do I want to go through life being bored, or do I want to do something interesting? And I was thought everyone would go through a dilemma, right? Surely interest is a huge thing. And what really struck me is how powerful money as a motivator can be to get people to do things they wouldn't otherwise do. And I don't know what research says on it. I don't know what studies say on it. I think studies and research say money is not as much of a motivator as we might think. But my personal experience of watching how it affects and moves and changes the way people think is in, it was incredible to watch it. So yeah, when we're talking about reward and accountability, there I can't sort of have that conversation without just sort of saying I don't know what the relationship is, but money is hugely important to some people more than others. And that's one of those areas I think I would like to do a bit more, as in genuine research, and to see what people have discovered about how money motivates people. Is it a legitimate motivator or not?
I've read studies where I think, is it like in one of those Nordic countries, they actually had a pilot project where like universal pay, right? So like certain threshold. Once that threshold has been reached, like you said, then money is not as much of a motivator, because, you know, they're not constantly worrying, you know, like, am I gonna be able to pay rent? Can I afford groceries? Can I afford to pay utility bills and all that, right? So once like the safety net of like, you know, your food and shelter has been covered, then I guess it still is, I think, in today's society, because it's just, we live in such a capitalist economy where like the more money you hoard, not only is it like a status symbol, but it's just like money solves most of the problems. 99% of the problems can be solved with money. And the more money you have, I mean, you know, there's that rap song, right? Like 99 problems, but a B ain't one. it's just, yeah, it won't solve everything, but 99% of the time it will. Like, I think it's just like how society has been set up, like leading up to today. Like it's a very materialistic, very capitalist society.
I find it really interesting that the difference between self-learning, how we reward ourselves for things, how we hold ourselves accountable, and a corporate job environment where accountability is the desire is to hold people to account for things, and reward is monetary, for the most part.
But it's also like in exchange for your time, for your labor, right? You need to be rewarded with something. And then I think also like in today's society, there's like this constant need to acquire the latest something. And how are you going to get that latest something? It's usually through money. I mean, like, look at me. Like, I switched from teaching to like tech because of like the monetary reward is significantly better. And, but like, that's not all, that's not the whole picture. There are other
so if between the two of us we could roll accountability partners or pairing with streaks and lists with a lot of money in terms of reward and a ton of interest with the ability to share with friends, I think we've nailed it. should we leave it there for this week?
I think so.